Uccishta lepa narumodito dvijai.
Uccishta lepa narumodito dvijai.
Sakrit smabunje tarapasta kilbisha.
Sakrit smabunje tarapasta kilbisha.
Evam pravritasya vishuddha chetasas.
Evam pravritasya vishuddha chetasas.
Tadharma evatma ruchi prajayate.
Tadharma evatma ruchi prajayate.
Uccishta lepa anumodito dvijai.
Uccishta lepa anumodito dvijai.
Sakrit smabunje tadapasta kilbisha.
Sakrit smabunje tadapasta kilbisha.
Evam pravritasya vishuddha chetasas.
Evam pravritasya vishuddha chetasas.
Tadharma ev atmaruchik prajayate.
Tadharma ev atmaruchik prajayate.
Uccishtalepan.
Uccishtalepan.
The remnants of foodstuff.
The remnants of foodstuff.
Anumoditaha.
Anumoditaha.
Being permitted.
Being permitted.
Dvijayi.
Dvijayi.
By the Vedantist Brahmanas.
By the Vedantist Brahmanas.
Sakrit.
Sakrit.
Once upon a time.
Once upon a time.
Sma.
Sma.
In the past.
In the past.
Bunje.
Bunje.
Took.
Tat.
By that action.
By that action.
Apasta.
Apasta.
Eliminated.
Eliminated.
Kilbishaha.
Kilbishaha.
All sins.
All sins.
Evam.
Evam.
Thus.
Thus.
Pravrittasya.
Pravrittasya.
Being engaged.
Being engaged.
Vishuddha chetasaha.
Vishuddha chetasaha.
Of one whose mind is purified.
Of one whose mind is purified.
Tat.
That particular.
That particular.
Dharmaha.
Dharmaha. Nature.
Nature.
Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Atmaruchihi.
Atmaruchihi.
Transcendental attraction.
Prajayate.
Prajayate. Was manifested. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Pure devotion. Oh, translation. Once only, by their permission, I took the remnants of their food. And by so doing, all my sins were at once eradicated. Thus being engaged, I became purified in heart. And at that time, the very nature of the transcendentalist became attractive to me. Purport. Pure devotion is as much infectious in a good sense as infectious diseases. A pure devotee is cleared from all kinds of sins. The personality of Godhead is the purest entity. And unless one is equally pure from the infection of material qualities, one cannot become a pure devotee of the Lord. The Bhaktivedantas, as above mentioned, were pure devotees. And the boy became infected with their qualities of purity by their association, and by eating once the remnants of the foodstuff taken by them. Such remnants may be taken even without permission of the pure devotees. actually, it's not so polite to ask for the Mahaprasadam. I mean, that's putting someone in an embarrassing position while he's eating to ask for his remnants. Better to steal it when he's not, when he walks away. Allah Prabhupada says, he says, better, you can take without asking, and actually it's better not to ask, just take. Not grab it while he's eating, but when he's done, and when he doesn't see it, then you can take. Sorry, I interrupted the purport. There are sometimes pseudo-devotees, and one should be very much cautious about them. There are many things which hinder one from entering devotional service. But by the association of pure devotees, all these obstacles are removed. The neophyte devotee becomes practically enriched with the transcendental qualities of the pure devotees, which mean attraction for the personality of Godhead, his name, fame, qualities, pastimes, etc. Infection of the qualities of the pure devotee means to imbibe the taste of pure devotion always in the transcendental activities of the personality of God. This transcendental taste at once makes all material things distasteful. Therefore, a pure devotee is not at all attracted by material activities. After the elimination of all sins or obstacles on the path of devotional service, one can become attracted. One can have steadiness. One can have perfect taste. One can have transcendental emotions. And at last, can be situated on the plane of loving service of the Lord. All these stages develop by the association of pure devotees. And that is the purport of this stanza. In this one point, it's actually better for Narada that his mother is a Shudra. If she was a Bhaka Brahmana, she probably would have told him, don't touch anybody's juta, don't eat off of anybody's plate. She would have forbidden him to take any remnants. And normally, the Vaishnavas don't like to give away their remnants. They consider it offensive. Why should someone eat my dirty remnants? They don't, they try. The injunction for a sannyasi, he shouldn't leave any, technically. According to Dharma Shastra, a sannyasi shouldn't leave remnants. But the Vaishnavas are lax about this. We consider the dust from the feet of the Vaishnavas, the water that has washed their feet, and their leftovers of their prasadam to be very sacred. So we're not fussy about not touching juta, if it's the juta or the remnants of the Vaishnava. Prabhupada discusses a serious matter in this purport, that because Krishna is supremely pure, there is no tinge of contamination in him. If someone wants to associate with Krishna, he also has to become completely pure. You can practice to associate with Krishna. You can do service with Krishna. But to actually enter his intimate association, his company, to get near him, you have to become, first of all, completely pure. This is not easy. Yogis, gyanis, philosophers are striving for purity, and they're struggling for many lifetimes without completing that struggle. How are we supposed to come to that standard? Kunti Devi wonders. Tata paramahamsanam amalam tata paramahamsanam muninam amalatmanam bhakti yoga vidhanartam katam pashima hi striyaha. You are here in this world mostly for the benefit, she thinks, of the paramahamsas, the topmost saintly devotees, who are great sages, muninam, amalatmanam, and their hearts are totally pure. You kind came to this world to bestow pure devotion to them. to the great sages and Paramahamsas. How is it that simple and not very elevated women like myself are able to see you? That is amazing. Why do you give yourself to those who are unfit? Because Kunti Devi is pure. Her birth is not a disqualification. Her qualification is her pure heart. So this is the onus on us. We have to become pure. We want to enter Krishna's association. That is our goal. Then we have to become perfect. How can we do this? By the association of elevated Vaishnavas. Best thing would be to have the association of 100% pure, empowered Paramahamsa. If you can find one. And if you can identify. It takes one to know one. How do you know who is a Paramahamsa? There's no sign on his forehead. There are no external symptoms by which you can tell. Everyone in the world may be praising him, but maybe he isn't what everybody thinks he is. And maybe the one who isn't getting praised is more elevated. How do you know who's a Paramahamsa, who's perfect? You can tell by some external symptoms. A person is showing no envy. A person is always enthusiastic about serving Krishna and never wasting any time. But these signs are also hard to read and they can be deceptive. A person can make a show of being better than he actually is. And a person may not care to make a show and he may not see how great he is. He may not show it. So, not only are Paramahamsas hard to find, but they're hard to identify, even if you have one. So we very often have to settle for the association of good but not perfect devotees. That is also greatly beneficial. Especially if you search for devotees who are more advanced than yourself. Svatovare. Sajata Ashaye Snigde Svatovare. This is Rupa Goswami's description of who you should try to associate with. In Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, when he's enunciating, listing the 64 practices of devotional service in Vaidhi Bhakti, in practice, and he points out five as the most potent, one of the five is to associate with devotees who are more advanced than yourself. And two other qualifications are added, who are sajata ashaya, who have a similar mood of devotional service similar to your own. Because there are different styles of devotional service. Someone's a preacher, someone's a meditator, someone's always exhibiting ecstasies, and someone's very grave. Different moods. And you have, although you haven't realized it yet, it's very covered, you have your devotional style built into you. So you should naturally try to gravitate toward a person whose style of devotional service seems to fit your personality. That should not be judged sentimentally or whimsically. Let Krishna help you figure that out. And with the counsel of senior devotees, figure out who you are compatible with. But there should be a certain chemistry, especially choosing guru. There should be a personal chemistry there. It's a personal thing. Your parents are choosing a spouse for you, and they're letting you participate in the choice. Would you like to marry this one, this one? And you think about compatibility. You have to live with this person for a few decades. Can you manage it? Is it someone you can live with? So the question of personal compatibility is significant, even in choosing a guru. Rupa Goswami says, sajat ashaya, you should have a similar mood. And snigdha, he should be sympathetic. He may be fully qualified, and he may be just the right guru for you, but maybe he's not interested in being a guru. Maybe he doesn't want to take the burden. Maybe he doesn't feel qualified. So unless he's willing to be the guru, and willing to take the trouble, also it won't work. So that also has to be there. He has to be sympathetic in the sense of willing to take the burden of accepting you as a disciple. So that's how to find a guru. It's also, this is, Rupa Goswami is talking in more general terms, who to associate, what association to look for in general, even apart from the question of taking initiation. We should look for mature association. When we associate with devotees who are more advanced than us, although we may be shy to do it, we may be scared to do it, that we might commit offenses, or we don't know how to deal with people who are more advanced than us. But we should learn how, because this is very beneficial. This is the prime way, the most effective way that we become more purified is by hearing from and serving and being in the company of persons who are more advanced. It just has to be relatively more advanced. You don't have to only be willing to deal with people who are absolutely perfect. And then you reject the association of almost everybody because they don't fit the bill. You have a long list of people who you don't want to associate with because they're not perfect. Then you can find some fault with everybody and you won't have anybody to associate with. This is not desirable. To isolate yourself because nobody's good enough to associate with. We should be satisfied with what Krishna provides us and seek the association of devotees who are more advanced than us. Don't be hypercritical so that no one's good enough to associate with because you're thinking too hypercritically. Look for the good qualities in everyone you see. There are people who are so audacious they found fault even with Prabhupada. There are such people in the world, believe it or not, who could find fault in such a perfect person. So if we become too much fault finders, then we'll end up criticizing those who shouldn't be criticized. And we'll lose, not only will we be committing aparad by that, but we'll lose the opportunity to gain and benefit from their association, because we won't want it. This is the power of Krishna's prasadam. These are devotees, the Bhaktivedantas. We presume they offered the food to Krishna. The maidservant, there's a painting, I don't know if it's in this volume, of the, no it isn't, it wasn't done for the first scan, but it's a painting, a recent painting, of Narada serving the Bhaktivedantas their meal. And they're sitting on a big mat on the floor, a steak in the painting. Because anybody who's read the Manusmriti knows you should not eat on the same mat that you're sitting on. You know, you're sitting on a mat, then the food should be on a separate mat or on the floor, the plate. You don't put the plate on the same mat that you're sitting on. It's specific injunction against it, Manu. And anyway, the picture shows them sitting on one big mat with their plates. They wouldn't do that. But, of course, I'm sure they offered it to Krishna before they took, because they were devotees. So what Narada is getting is Krishna's prasadam. Off the plates of the great devotees, maha maha prasadam. This is the potency of it. What happens to Narada? He only took it once. Because they were reluctant to give away their remnants, being sannyasis. But the boy, Anumodita, so he must have asked them. They gave him permission. Or maybe he didn't say anything, he was just looking. And they saw he was looking, and they said, okay, take some. They gave permission, verbally. That's what's said here. But it only happened once. They were not in the habit of giving away their remnants. And just by that, taking the prasadam of great devotees once, tadapasta kildusha, whatever contamination was in his heart was washed away. That's the potency of prasadam. When Srila Prabhupada was visiting Honolulu, Hawaii in 1975. I was there. And after the first few days, the devotees who had come from California and the west coast of America to see Prabhupada in Hawaii went back to their places, and only the local devotees remained. About 40 devotees, but most of them went out preaching during the day. So the temple was not, there were few devotees in the temple during the day, although Prabhupada was there. And Prabhupada would take his lunch at 2 o'clock every day. Upendra. The devotee Upendra was cooking for Prabhupada. Every day at 2:30, Prabhupada's remnants would come downstairs. And nobody was there to take them. They would put them in the devotee refrigerator, the refrigerator outside the kitchen for prasadam. They put Prabhupada's remnant plate in the refrigerator. And I would come every day, and there would be a cup of the remnants of his dal sitting there. Because Prabhupada didn't like to eat the dal beans. He would drink the juice. He told his servant, "You can eat the wrappers if you like. I shan't. I shall not." He didn't like to eat the dal beans. And I would take that. The dal beans that Prabhupada left at the bottom of the cup. And I'd take that every day for about 3 weeks. And I presume that's the main reason why I'm still in ISKCON. Having gotten that prasadam of Srila Prabhupada off of his plate every day. I can't prove that, but I have a feeling. The potency of prasadam is like that. We may think this is some mystic thing, magic, you know, how can we trust magic like this? It's just, you know, just by eating you become perfect? Yes. Just by eating Krishna's prasadam. Of course, it's very popular in India to think like that the prasada of your favorite deity is very potent, but it is. Krishna's prasadam is all purifying. The first business of a devotee, the one thing that marks the human being as a Vaishnava, first of all, is that he offers his food to Krishna. Some Vaishnavas don't chant Krishna's names. They've got some other sadhana they do. They just do some puja, and maybe say a few prayers. And they don't do japa or any regular chanting of Krishna's names. Not good, because it's recommended that everybody chant Krishna's names in Kali Yuga. But some devotees just don't get the point. They're still devotees. And the bottom line, the one thing that should be fulfilled before someone can be called a Vaishnava, is at least they're offering their food to Krishna before taking. They should be cooking for Krishna. Yogyashishtyashino samta mujyante sarvakil vishay bhujyate te tvagam papa ye pachyanti atmakaranat. The devotees of the Lord, or santa, saintly persons, only eat the remnants of sacrifice. That means what's been offered to the Supreme Lord. And thus, muchyante sarva kilbishai, same word. Apasta kilbisha, his contamination was driven away. And in the Gita, the same word is used. Muchyante, they become free. Sarva kilbishai, from all contamination. Just by virtue of their eating food that's been offered first to the Lord for his pleasure, and not eating other food. Because bhujyate te tvagam papa ye pachyanti atmakaranat, anyone who cooks for himself, not thinking this is for Krishna, he's eating whatever it is, he's eating only sin. Even strict vegetarian, without onions, without garlic, without tomatoes or carrots, doesn't matter. It can be the strictest vegetarian. But if he doesn't offer it to Krishna, he's eating only sin. Why are we such strict vegetarians? You know, not eating onions in the South makes you an outcast. You can't eat anywhere. You can't eat in anybody's house. You can't eat in most restaurants. You know, how do you avoid onions in the South unless you cook for yourself or eat in Krishna's temple? Why? Why do we take so much trouble? You know, is a little onion going to drag you to hell? Because, I mean, it doesn't say that onions are greatly sinful. But it said, the explanation given in the Ayurveda, onions have certain good qualities. They're blood pure, you know, onion and garlic, both are very strong blood purifiers. But Ayurveda says, and Manusmriti says, not recommended for Brahmanas, because it dulls the consciousness. These are tamasic vegetables. And a Brahman who's accustomed to eating onions and garlic, his brain will become dull. So, Shudras, they can eat. But Brahmanas should not take the onion and garlic. That's recommendation of Manusmriti and of Ayurveda. And our Acharyas, Gopalbhatta Goswami and so on, have enjoined that our Vaishnavas in the Gaudiya line should avoid onions and garlic. But, why is it that some vegetarians won't even take milk? Vegans. They won't take any animal product, including milk. And there's others who call themselves vegetarians, but they think that it's okay to eat eggs. Why are we not siding with either of them? We have some other position. Why? Is it just different opinions? No. There's a reason for it. The real reason is, you can argue why eggs are bad and why milk is good, but it's not up for those reasons. It's because we only eat what we offer to Krishna. Whatever Krishna wants, that will be our prasadam. Whatever we've supplied to Krishna for his meal, we take the remnants. If Krishna wanted eggs, we'd offer him eggs, but he doesn't want them. If he wanted garlic and onions, we'd give it to him. He doesn't want it. That's understood from many sources, that Krishna doesn't eat onions and garlic. He doesn't like them. So we suit Krishna's preferences, and that defines what our food is. The criterion is, we offer whatever Krishna wants, and we only take Krishna's remnants. That's it. No, not medical argument, ethical argument, anything else. Argument that Krishna, this is what Krishna wants. That is all purifying. When our food is all offered to Krishna, then our consciences become sanctified. Our whole life becomes sanctified. And we add to that chanting of Krishna's names and serving and associating with devotees, then we have a very potent program. Then, unless we commit offenses, it will be very hard to fall down back into Maya. Such potent protection, such potent power for elevation and purification. Taking shelter of Krishna's prasadam, his names, and his devotees. That's all we have to do. Hare Krishna. Okay, so are there any questions or comments?
So rather than just by taking once the salam from the devotees, but like you said, completely purified. Also, there's another statement that just by chanting holy name once, purely, only once can be completely purified. So, does any condition like you have to purely chant, then it completely eradicates the sins about prasadam concerning, like now that the one can get completely purified. So, if
purely doesn't mean on the highest platform with pure love. What's meant by that is simply without offenses. When you chant without offenses, then you get liberation, even if you don't have any taste of love. But at least you're avoiding offenses. Then chanting once will get you, without offenses, will give you liberation. Problem is, we're committing offenses. And therefore our chanting is offensive. We have to stop those offenses, then we'll get our liberation. I presume the same thing with prasadam. We have this prayer, Mahaprasade Govinde. Someone who doesn't have faith in prasadam, thinks it's ordinary food, or is discriminating. I don't like that prasadam, I won't touch it. or you think badly about the prasadam because you don't like the way it was prepared, it doesn't suit your taste, too much sugar, too much pepper, this, that. If you're criticizing prasadam, that's aparad. So there's, you know, I haven't seen a specific list, but there are aparads against prasadam too. In general terms, it said, if you don't have faith in Krishna's prasadam, you're very unfortunate. Alpa punya bhutam. It's degraded. It's not proper to not have great respect for prasadam. And usually, you know, if we're just thinking of it as food, and thinking in the terms of our tongue and belly, and reacting like that, then we'll probably commit offense against our prasadam. And then we'll have to, you know, we'll be punished by having to take prasadam for 50 years before we become purified.
What about the people who come to Govinda restaurants where they have, for example, some of them didn't have even the slightest idea that this is prasadam offered, they just come?
Well, the restaurant shouldn't hide itself. It should be Govinda's restaurant.
Yeah.
And they should, we should, you know, try to let them know what it is that's Krishna's prasadam. But, you know, they're committing offenses. There was those devotees in Europe approached me and asked what to do about this bakery that, you know, they had their restaurant, that was fine, people were coming there and eating. But in the bakery, they were taking the bread home, buying it and taking it home, and then putting meat on it in their houses. And they decided not to offer the bread, to sell it without offering it. But then it wasn't prasadam, it was boga. What's the use of the devotees running a bakery selling boga bread? Better let it be prasadam. And if they commit aparads, at least they got prasadam. Better to get prasadam and commit aparad against it than to lose out and not get any prasadam. Especially a person who's a meat eater, you don't expect more from him. Krishna's not going to take it so seriously that a meat eater is acting like a meat eater. Let him have the prasadam. So, you know, offenses may be there, but the offenses are serious for a practicing devotee who's supposed to know better. But for a person off the street who knows nothing, Krishna's not going to take those offenses too seriously. Let him have the prasadam. Just like chant, go ahead and chant with offenses. Better than not chanting. Chant a lot, chant day and night, and the offenses will go away. So stuff yourself with prasadam, and your offenses will also, against prasadam will go away. Only cure to offensive attitude toward prasadam is to stuff yourself with prasadam. Just as the only cure of offensive chanting is to chant constantly.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Like you were saying, we offer only what Krishna likes and we give only that.
Yes.
Does Krishna really like the pan and the offer and...
Oh yeah, yes. Even when he's a child, he's being offered this supati. Krishna likes it. We don't take it because Gopal Bhatta specifically says that we should not eat the remnants of the pan offered to Krishna. But he says to offer to Krishna, he's our smriti acharya, he's telling us how to perform our worship. And he says, yes, the pan should be offered to Krishna. You know, that means he wants it. But out of, you know, because it is something of a mild intoxicant, he judged that the Vaishnavas should not, they can put it on their head and then give it to the cows, but they shouldn't eat the pan offered to Krishna.
How about Garuda? Garuda is eating only snakes. So what would he do in this case?
Because he doesn't get prasadam?
I mean, that's his food, Garuda's food.
Oh no, but I'm sure he also takes Krishna's remnants. It doesn't say he only eats turtles and snakes. It doesn't, you know. I'm sure he can tolerate, you know, a little bit of olive oil that's been offered to Krishna. It doesn't say that Garuda only eats animals. So I'm sure he's very eager to get whatever Krishna prasadam he can get.
But how do we justify that he's taking some snakes also to India?
Not only snakes, we kill some.
Yeah, yeah, but that's...
We catch them, we can take them.
Yes. Because Krishna allows it. He's a big bird. So he's allowed to, you know, eat his natural food. It's okay. Whatever Krishna allows his devotees. Sometimes the devotees are kshatriyas. And in some cases they may kill animals in the forest. And they may eat the flesh. That's for kshatriya. Prabhupada also said, yes, a kshatriya can eat meat if it's, you know, under certain circumstances. Not us, not initiated Vaishnavas, but you know, some kshatriyas can do it without breaking their principles. Even human beings want to speak of birds. Okay, so Krishna allows it. Yes?
Preparation of the prasadam, actually, we have to use the firewood. So gas we should not use. I think it is not practical.
In the north we use gover. My wife cooks with gover, with the cow dung. Not all the time though. I mean, it's very smoky.
That is one of the reasons why the sannyasis should not cross the ocean, because they cannot prepare the prasadam in firewood.
There's wood there. They got plenty of wood. In America, there's wood. Yes, that's ideal. That's ideal. But because the food cooks, it tastes better also when cooked naturally like that. Krishna will accept, though. When Prabhupada was, even in India, Prabhupada cooked with propane. So, well, you know, it's ideal, but we can't always practice the ideal. If you can do it, then Krishna will be very pleased. Yeah. Cook just with firewood, cook just with cow manure. That's village life. The people in the city, they're unfortunate, they can't do that. In the north, we don't have much wood, very little. Yeah. Too expensive. But the gopher is very cheap. Yeah. Yes? Yes, pardon?
We have an incident from Ramanujacharya's pastime that he sends the prasad to one shopkeeper, one merchant who gave things to one of his disciples, and he wanted the wife of that disciple to spend the night with him.
Yes.
So he gave the remnants, and with that he got purified. So, but that person was not even conscious that he's taking prasad.
Didn't know, yes.
So why don't we see such effects? Like, is there some criteria for the person who gives prasad? Because it was Krishna prasad, but here we see that people eat prasad and still the same drive is made.
Well, because of offenses committed, the person may not get the full benefit, the full effect. Or the effect may be postponed because of offenses. It may come later in his life. He may get liberation, but not immediately. It's not foreseen. It's the result, the purifying result may come only in the future. And also, depending on how the prasadam is offered to Krishna, who is giving you the remnants of his consciousness, the potency may be even greater if a great devotee gives you the prasadam. So in the case of Ramanujacharya sending the prasadam, then the potency was even greater. You know, touched his hands, then it became even more purifying. Special potency, and therefore it had an exceptional result. Because it was specially empowered by the devotee's touch.
There was also an incident in Melkote where he washed hands and fishes that ate the prasad. They got Chatamurti Rupa and rose to Vaikunth.
Yeah. Yes. If you're contagious. Yes? Special mercy. Yes. So a devotee, if he becomes infected with Krishna consciousness, with love of God, then whoever he touches, whoever sees him, becomes transformed.
His own disciples were wondering, we are getting his prasad every day.
Mm. And what did he say? Did he explain?
I don't know. But they must have certainly wondered.
things. Like sometimes it depends upon faith, and sometimes and sometimes doesn't.
I don't know what faith those fish had, but
yeah. So.
But they weren't committing operette. The disciples are probably complacent. I would say, you know, they get this bishadam every day, so they don't have due respect for it.
Yes. There's no shortcut for spiritual life as such. The fishes had perfected their life, but there was little thing that was left out. So the last push Ramanujacharya gave them.
So they were great sages who had taken birth as fish. That's a special case then. Anyway, don't be disappointed if you don't get four arms every time you eat prasadam. Just keep on eating it. You'll get your arms. Two arms, four arms, whatever you want. Okay. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.